Good morning, listeners, and welcome to this week's Farm Focus. Later on in the programme, I will be talking to Gary Graham from On Board Bia with regard to what Bloom Festival, which is on this weekend, virtually as it so happens, looks like, and he'll tell us all a little bit about it. But my first guest this morning is Aidan Bugler, and as you all know, Aidan is a dairy advisor with Chagas here in the county. Good morning, Aidan, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Jim.
We've had a very difficult month of May, weather-wise, haven't we? And how are dairy farms set up now for grass supply?
Yeah, Jim, there's no doubt the April-May period has been challenging for many farms. Temperatures were well below normal, as we all know, for the 2 months. And that had a knock-on effect on grass growth, which was restricted, really. And I suppose while the weather was quite dry in April and early May, the wet conditions there towards the second half of May made it more difficult in for grazing, particularly on the heavy farms with the wet soils. I suppose having said that though, Jim, I think most area farms have coped pretty well. When the weather was dry, while growth was slow, grazing conditions were good and grass was utilised well. And you know, farmers made up any shortage they had in feed supply with maybe extra meal or some silage being fed. Really, I think just when the weather got wet there, that it became more difficult because not only did it get wet, but it remained cold. So we had the restriction in growth continued, but also grass dry matters dropped off and grazing conditions got worse in. But again, I suppose at this stage, Jim, a lot of farmers are kind of getting used to dealing with these difficult conditions. And I think most, as you know, would have adjusted their grazing to cope with the, you know, particularly on heavy farms where they might have shortened the grazing times, taking cows in, you know, by night or taking them off for parts of the day to reduce damage and to allow them to be fed inside. And to be fair, you know, I think the kind of the actions that dairy farmers have been taking the last 2 months are shown in, you know, milk yields are very good in cows and have held up quite well this year, you know. So despite difficult conditions, they've managed to feed their cows well. And I suppose thankfully now, the weather for the last week is much improved and ground conditions and growth are quite good at the moment.
Okay, and with this change in the weather, do farmers need to adjust their grassland management again?
From our point of view, the advice doesn't really change around managing the grass. Trying to do that is the theory is easy, but the practicality maybe is harder, you know. So we'd be advising farmers to keep a cover, you know, for those that are used to the covers of 170 or 80 kilos of dry matter per cow on the farm during the main grazing season. That's about 10 days grass on the farm. Look, it's a simple thing to do if growth was constant, you know, but when growth fluctuates from poor to good and everything in between, it makes that more difficult. You know, during the cold spell, farmers were trying to maintain that cover by lengthening out the rotation and putting in extra feed, as we were saying, and trying to manage the limiting damage of the ground and so on. But now that growth has taken off again, I think, you know, farmers have to get back into their head that they have to adjust back to anything maybe from a 16 to 20 day rotation, reducing the feed, obviously no silage, and maybe back to a kilo or two a meal, and then taking out any kind of surplus grass or grass that's going strong and not grazing that. Like I was saying, Jim, the cover per cow thing we're trying to keep around the same. So I suppose it's kind of controlling the variables around the growth then to keep that right. And ideally, farmers should be measuring their grass to do that. You know, if they're measuring their grass once a week and maybe walking it twice a week, you know, that they know then what covers are going into all the time and how much grass they have on the farm. And I suppose, you know, that basically leads on then to having good quality grass in front of their cows. So we'd be kind of getting farmers to target 1,400 or 1,500 covers, you know, which is high quality tree leaf kind of stage in the grass, and that means the cows will make better and they can also do so at a kind of a lower cost.
Okay, and Aidan, what about fertilisers? Should dairy farmers be applying some fertiliser now?
Yeah, well, I suppose, Jim, you know, we have growth now, as we were saying, much improved than where it was. But for any farmer that wants to maybe express the potential of the farm to grow, you know, the nutrients have to be kind of balanced up for that as well. And the three big ones that we usually look at are the nitrogen, phosphorus and potassium. I suppose the phosphorus and potassium, whether they're applied or not now, will depend on, you know, what the soil analysis for the farm will be telling the farmer. So, you know, if parts of the farm or all the farm are in mix one or two, then for P and K, then basically they need build up to bring them up to the kind of ideal level of an index three. if they're already in Index 3 or above, then, you know, the Index 3 just needs maintenance, and anything above Index 3 doesn't need any P&K. So I suppose the advice of the P&K, Jim, would be, if it's needed, to keep putting it on to get the build-up done, especially with the phosphorus that we've done early. Just as regards the nitrogen then, Jim, I suppose this time of year we're talking of roughly a unit of nitrogen per day. You know, so if you're on a 20-day round, or a three-week round, it's kind of 20 units of nitrogen every 3 weeks. You know, beyond that, it's excess. It could be lost out of the system, or it's kind of creating additional grass that may not be needed on the farm. So I suppose the compounds may be needed if the P&K is needed, and if we're going for a straight nitrogen, we'd be saying it should go with protected urea from now on.
Okay. Now, you're after mentioning protected urea, Aidan. Why is this fertiliser being recommended now?
Yeah, well, Jim, I suppose, look, we're all kind of well aware of, targets around emissions for the country. And agriculture obviously would have its part to play in that. And one of the technologies that's available to agriculture is the use of protected urea. Basically, Jim, how this works is it has a urease inhibitor in it that kind of protects the urea from being lost to the air in the dry, warm weather of the summer. So your ordinary urea, we'll call it, can get lost in kind of good drying conditions, you know, where the protected urea won't. I suppose from the environmental point of view or the greenhouse gas point of view, there's a significant reduction in nitrous oxide losses and emissions, basically, when you compare it to CAN. Now, the nitrous oxide is one of the more potent greenhouse gases from agriculture. And agriculture in Ireland will be one of the main sources. And I suppose within agriculture, then fertilizer is one of the main sources of that again. But if we can switch from CAN to protected urea, we can reduce that nitrous oxide emissions by about 70%, which is very, very significant. And there's an estimate there that if all CAN was switched over to protected urea, we'd be taking out the equivalent of about 200,000 cows of emissions. So there's a big saving that can be made there from the emissions point of view. And I suppose on the other side of it, Jim, it's actually a little cheaper than CAN per unit of nitrogen. So it's one of those, I suppose, win-win technologies, and that it has the environmental benefits, but also no reduction in grass production, and actually a bit of a saving in cost for the farmer. And just one other point as well, Jim, that's worth maybe mentioning there, if we're talking about win-win kind of scenarios for the environment and emissions, we were talking about the high-quality grass there, putting that in front of cows, because, you know, the benefit is obvious to a farmer. He'll have better protein, better yield than his cows, and can reduce imported feeds. But the research is actually showing as well that if farmers are grazing those 14 or 1,500 covers versus grazing strong grass of around 2,000 of a cover, there's actually a reduction in about 15% of the methane being produced by the grazing animals in that. So again, it's another win-win, I suppose, situation there for the farmer and the environment.
Okay. And one last question to you this morning, Aidan. What about applying lime? Is it worthwhile investment on dairy farms, particularly at this time of the year?
Yeah, absolutely, Jim. I suppose, look, lime is I suppose the first thing to say about it is the cheapest fertilizer that's available, and it's often the one that's ignored. You know, I suppose oftentimes farmers will go away and they'll buy the nitrogen, the phosphorus, the potassium that we were talking about, but maybe forget about the lime, and it has a huge benefit in the soil. It acts as a soil conditioner by basically reducing the acidity of the soil. What that does is it makes the nutrients that we want, the nitrogen, the phosphorus and the potassium, more available to the plant. And it also increases the kind of the microbes and the activity of the microbes in the soil. And so again, making phosphorus more available. We're talking about the environment there as well, Jim. Mm-hmm. And there's actually, there's a saving on emissions of nitrous oxide that can be released from the soil as well by improving the pH. And research is showing significant reductions there by bringing the pH up to the correct level, up to 39 or 40% reduction. So again, a big plus there. But if we go back to the farmer's point of view, by correcting the pH, we can be growing an extra half a ton of grass per hectare, which, again, very significant. And also, just by liming alone, we're releasing a lot of phosphorus that's built up in the soil. You know, so again, if a farmer's going away and spending a lot of money on fertilizer or trying to build up P, if the pH is wrong, it's the wrong way to go about it, because the farmer's putting out expensive phosphorus that's getting locked up in the soil. He's not getting the benefit from it, and he's not growing the grass. So I suppose for those reasons, Jim, we'd be saying get the lime out. sometimes farmers are inclined to leave it till the back end of the year to do it, though, which can work. But sometimes, like an autumn like last year where it got very wet, it doesn't work, where, you know, the ground gets too wet and it's not trafficable, and just the lime doesn't get spread in. So, you know, we're at the start of June now. Silage has been cut. Silage fields may need lime after they're cut. It's a great time to put it on, you know, on bare ground. But also, have a look at your latest soil sample results. Are some of the grazing paddocks in need of lime as well? Because that could work in with getting a couple of loads of lime, maybe with the silage ground and with some of the grazing paddocks as well.
That, listeners, was Aidan Bugler from Chagas here in the county. Listeners, my next guest this morning is Gary Graham. And Gary is the director of the Bloom Festival in the Phoenix Park. And of course, there is no bloom this year. We're all sitting at home. Again, we had no bloom last year in the park. Gary is with me to talk about maybe what's going to happen in the future. It's great to have him back on radio. Gary, good to talk to you. I know we should be running around the Phoenix Park, and you should have been running around it for the past 2 months. You're at home and you're thinking about what we could be doing this weekend.
Yeah, great to talk to you, even though it is a little bit like Groundhog Day. Who could have believed a year ago that this thing would still be going on and we'd still be dealing with it, and our worlds and our lives would be turned upside down. But anyway, here we are. You know, we've, you know, thankfully most of us have come through it unscathed, so we can't complain too much about bloom, I guess. You know, it's as we all know, some people have really, really suffered over the last, you know, 15 months or so. We look on the bright side, and there is a bright side. There's a very bright side, because what has happened last year, and it's happening again this year, because people have been so restricted in their movements and where they can go and be safe and so on, that they're spending time in the garden. Now, of course, you know, we're transitioning out, and people can get out and about in nature, back to all the great sites and famous gardens and places. But up until recently, we were at home, and the garden became the sanctuary. And a lot of people who didn't even know they had a garden never had time to step foot beyond the washing line or whatever, or the bins, you know. A lot of those people discovered that the garden can be a fantastic place, very rewarding when you grow something, particularly if you're growing a bit of food or something. You've got that sense of achievement, and you're getting close to nature, and you're getting away from Zoom calls, which is no harm. So there is a bright side. Like we saw in the gardening market, if we can call it that, that the amount of growth last year, the amount of new people mm-hmm. that came to gardening or came back to gardening, that had more time, where life had just got so busy over recent decades, that the value of the garden market, would you believe, went up to €1.2 billion. There was a 50% increase over 2 years. We had measured it in 2018. And last year we saw, as I said, a 50% increase. So the amount of time, interest, money, energy being invested in gardening, it's got to be a good thing. And it's happening again this year, and people now are starting to really kind of learn. They can maybe they made a few mistakes last year, and they can see how to improve upon it, and they can see the fruits of their labour if they put a bit of work in, did a bit of planting, put in a bit of a social area or space they can use for dining or for a coffee or whatever. So there is a silver lining, I guess. And of course, we have some great ideas, and we have time to talk about them in terms of some of the supports and initiatives that we're rolling out as well, to remind people that it is the bloom again and that we will be back next year.
Okay. And thinking of next year, and I know you've had a rerun of Super Gardens on RTE television. It was great watching you for those.
Well spotted the reruns, yeah.
But, I think we spoke about, and I was praising, you know, that these were going, the gardens that you were featured on television were in social housing, which I thought was a wonderful idea. But, you know, when I looked at the series again, my mind started to think, will the winner of that particular series, will that be the garden, the super garden, that will go to the next actual bloom in the park?
That's a great question, Jim. We wouldn't want to try to get anything past you, would we? That's a very good question, and you're spot on. the winner from last year, that and that was shown as a repeat, as you said, this year, that winner will come to bloom next year. He, Mark Hoy is the guy in question, should have come this year. He will come next year. And in addition to that, the winner of Super Garden from next year will also be at bloom. So we'll have two Super Garden winners at bloom next year. And here's another inside scoop for you, Jim, and for your listeners. We're actually making Super Garden for next year at the moment. We're actually making it at the moment. And again, it's a similar sort of situation with social housings in a different part of the country. I won't get into too much detail because it hasn't been revealed.
Right.
But we're actually making that program at the moment. Those gardens will be built during June, and we'll be up there looking and visiting and judging and so on. And we'll get it all wrapped up in early July. And that program then, where we put in the can, as they say, and we'll have that for next spring in advance of Bloom 2022. But I'll tell you what I'm really happy about. It means that whereas on a normal year, a pre-COVID year, when we're making Super Garden, you're making those gardens in the muck and the rain and the cold in February and March, you know, and there's not a lot of, I won't say there's not a lot of plants. There are plants, but in terms of making it, the plants look really well on TV. You have a more limited range and the plants are smaller. And what can happen is that the horticultural side of the garden design doesn't get enough profile, or it's not highlighted enough. It becomes more about the hard landscaping, you know. So thankfully, this year we're making it now. There's a lot more plants, obviously. There's a lot more going on in June. So I think, and I can tell you the contestants, because I've met them all now and I've interviewed them and done a little bit of mentoring with them. They're a fantastic bunch of people. So I'm really excited about Super Garden that everyone will get to see next spring before Bloom 2022.
All I can say is roll on next spring. So, because the other thing I would say, having looked at the gardens again, the rerun, that I was surprised at the amount of detail that I missed on the first run.
That doesn't surprise me. And I would have, obviously, I was there and I saw the gardens up close and I spoke to the designers and I saw the finished footage before it was ever aired on TV. And so I've seen that stuff, that content, time and time again. And yet I watched the repeats and I sat and I listened to Monica and I listened to Brian. And I thought, God, that was a great point. Because, you know, when you're so focused on your own stuff or your own thoughts or, you know, your own perspective, you don't always get to see everything else and hear everything. And I saw stuff. I thought, well, God, that was good. I didn't really pay enough attention to that. There's so much detail, I guess, in those gardens. They're doing such a good job. And then even though we had the one-hour format last year, which was fantastic to have, that RTE were happy to pull it out over the 1 hour, because obviously they were short on the content last year with COVID. Even with that one-hour format, there's a lot of material is condensed in there. So it's very fast-paced there. You really have to watch and listen very closely to pick it all up. So I'm not surprised, Jim, at all to hear you say that.
Yeah. Okay. We have a couple of minutes left. And I know that you have things on for this weekend to, in some way, give us something to do over the weekend. What should we be looking out for, Gary?
Yeah, it's really about marking the bloom weekend. Now we see it from, you know, talking to the media and people like yourself, and we see it from people on social media. So, you know, people love bloom and they want to see it coming back. So we want to mark the weekend, remind people that it's on. So we've lovely competitions online across all the social media channels. You see them, and we've a bit of support from RTE on that as well. And if you want to share some examples of the great bit of gardening that you might be doing at home, whether it's on a little balcony or in a big garden or whatever the situation, there's a nice competition there running across the weekend. We have some fantastic new content whereby one of my colleagues, Carol Marks, I think you might be talking to Carol at some point. Yeah. Carol worked very hard across here putting together this new initiative where we got seven of our top bloom designers to provide us with very, very detailed plans and drawings and plant lists and so on. So if you were, you know, a novice starting off and you're thinking, my God, I wouldn't know where to start or what plant to put beside what plant. This is a great starting point for that, but very detailed information, sort of information. If you were bringing in one of these top designers, you'd be paying a lot of money to get this level of focus and this level of focus and the seven different designs there that we have. And all that is sitting up on the Board Be a Bloom website. So that's www.boardbeabloom. So that's there and it's up there now. And that's a fantastic resource. And on Sunday, we're all going into, we've kind of set up a little studio of our own in the Board Be offices. And it's like a kind of a garden setting or a patio almost. And Miriam O'Callaghan is coming in and giving us the day. And we've all sorts of fantastic speakers and panelists who will join us right across Sunday. And all of that will be shared online. And again, I'd say it's probably easiest to go back to the Bloom website, the Board Be a Bloom website, for information on that. And you can tune in online and you can put in some questions. And that's going to be great fun there, because we have people like Peter O'Mahony from Cork, the great rugby player who has turned into an incredibly good gardener during COVID, and he's going to be on. Miriam, we talking to him, and we've got our top chefs. You know, we've got Catherine Fulvio, we've got some of these great social media people who have huge followings and who have, you know, and they've been sharing their gardening stories over the last year. People like James Kavanagh, some TV presenters and personalities, actresses like Eveen Garrahy, people like that. They're all coming on, so we're going to have great fun. But again, hopefully with a lot of good information and inspiration, because that's what Bloom is all about, is inspiration. So hopefully we'll bring some of that to the nation online on Sunday.
Okay, well, Gary, I'll have to cut you short at this stage. And I know you could keep going for another hour and a half with me here, but unfortunately I don't have that length of time. I want to thank you ever so much for joining us and sharing that with us. And there you are, listeners, if you want something to do over this bank holiday weekend, why not go to the Board Be a site and go to Bloom, and you will find plenty there to entertain you for the weekend and improve your time in the garden. That, listeners, is Farm Focus for this week. I hope you enjoyed the show and that you will join me at the same time next week. Coming up next is the news at 10 o'clock. And after that, Mike Gardner presents Country Corner.